CJ joins us on Tuesdays and Thursdays right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And Mr. Johnston, we'll start with last night, a 3-2 Tampa win over the Dallas Stars in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. Your impressions of what we saw in Game 2?
Well, to be honest, I'm still getting a feel for the series. You know, I don't, you know, have a good sense of where things are at, but certainly it fell in line with what I was expecting to be a long series because, you know, I just don't see a huge gap in these teams right now. They're, you know, what's probably surprising the most is just how physical and feisty they've been because we don't always see that early in the Cup Final with teams that typically don't have any kind of rivalry or pass together. And, you know, it's the battle is on right now, and the stakes are pretty high for these guys as they enter their last week in the bubble here.
What's your gut feel say on Steven Stamkos? Is he knocking on the door to return, or is this a John Cooper smokescreen?
I think he's going to return. You know, I just can't even imagine what it would be like to have spent this long in quarantine with his teammates, being away from his family and not being able to play these games, and you know, just how his career is really built up to get to a moment like this one. And so, you know, with everything that's at stake and with the way we saw him skate yesterday at the morning skate, even though he didn't play in the game, to me, it's pointing towards him playing. I don't know what percentage he's at. So don't even have full clarity on what kind of issue he's dealing with. But, you know, I would think for Tampa, it would be a big boost emotionally to get him back in there. And I do think that even at somewhere less than 100%, I mean, we've seen him working on his one time every time he's been on the ice that we've been able to get a look at it. And, you know, putting him on their power play, I think, is a weapon in itself worth doing, even if they don't feel he can play sort of a regular shift at 5-on-5.
So are media allowed back in for morning skates? Is that something that has changed for the Stanley Cup Final?
Yeah, it actually just changed yesterday. So we didn't get in
for
game
one. Oh, wow, okay.
And so yesterday was the first morning skate I was at since March 12th. And, you know, what's interesting about it, you know, for the listeners that aren't familiar with the process, I mean, normally both teams before game skate, you know, one after the other. Well, at the rink here in Edmonton, they have a practice rink inside. So we only get to see the one team that's skating on the main rink that day. And so there'll be a little bit more drama tomorrow because that'll be Dallas' skate that we see tomorrow. So okay. we won't get the same sense of what kind of things Stamkos is or isn't doing at Tampa skate because we're not going to get our own eyes on it.
Huh, that's interesting. So they just changed that for game two of the Cup Final, hey?
Yeah, it's really just about, you know, managing the space, I think. You know, when there was more teams there, they were moving around different parts of the rink. I mean, now both teams are in one dressing room fully, and, you know, they can basically just allow us to go in and sit at the same spot we're watching the game and watch those skates. And so I think it's more about that than anything that's maybe changed with the policy or the way they're looking at it. I think it's just a little bit easier. It makes more sense to do now that teams are doing the morning skate on the main rink because, you know, even before this, I think almost all practice days were in the practice rink.
Final thought and on the Stanley Cup Final, which you are in Edmonton for, with Game 3 going tomorrow. I know that the Stars don't win last night, but Joe Pavelski gets them on the board with another goal. And I know that in the regular season, there had been some talk about maybe Pavelski wasn't such a great fit in Dallas. But I think that we all thought that the postseason is where he was going to make his biggest impact. Just a thought on how big of an impact that has been for the Stars.
Well, I mean, 10 goals is something. I mean, that's the same number Braden Point has. You know, Victor Hedman's at 9. You know, that's a great playoffs for any player, but someone at Joe Pavelski's age and the way he's used by that team, I think it's phenomenal, and it's played a big factor in, you know, how the fact they've been able to play this long into the season. And you know, what's interesting about his career is he's one of those guys, whether it's like a Justin Williams or, you know, even Logan Couture's former teammate in San Jose. I mean, he's consistently put up big numbers in the playoffs, even, you know, scoring at rates that you wouldn't see during some of his best regular seasons. So, you know, I think that the body of work is there, even though Joe Pavelski's out here fighting right now for his first Stanley Cup, you know, that he is a big game player and that he's someone, you know, even in the later stages of his career now, that's able to elevate and find a way to get to the net and get, you know, tips. I mean, that's where a lot of his goals come from is in that hard area, either, you know, cashing in a rebound or getting a, you know, a tip on a puck because he's got such great hand-eye coordination.
With Chris Johnston, our NHL insider who joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays. Today joining us on Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Ratings, television ratings down in the United States. Those numbers have started to come out over the last 24, 48 hours, both in the first two games of the Stanley Cup Final and looking at the playoffs as a whole. But more importantly, the last two rounds, conference finals and now into the Stanley Cup Final, knowing the competition that they're up against and just knowing how many different options that exist right now. Were you shocked to see that U.S. television ratings were down in the conference finals and the Stanley Cup finals?
Not entirely. I think maybe just because we didn't have some of the markets that really sell in the U.S. And, you know, hockey's still quite a regional game in the States. And you know, there's always jokes about, you know, Chicago playing in every outdoor game. Well, it's not a coincidence. It's because that's a team that consistently drives television numbers when it comes to national broadcasts in the U.S. And so, you know, because we didn't have some of those markets involved, I'm maybe not surprised. You know, plus, I don't know what anyone should think of as normal this year, to be honest. I mean, I have to imagine there are people out there that were or have been diehard hockey fans that maybe they just didn't get into this for whatever reason. This has been a hard time on a lot of people. You know, and you know, while I'm someone who's, you know, dove right head first back into sports, watching all the golf I could on the weekend, you know, obviously covering these playoff games, watching baseball, watching the NBA when I've got some time. You know, I think some people maybe just this year have, you know, for whatever reason, lost some interest. And, you know, I think the fact there is so much competition also has to be, you know, factored into the equation, because it's not too often you're, you know, the NHL is going head-to-head with the U.S. Open golf tournament or, you know, some of the tennis tournaments that have gone on, other things that are going to divide the sporting eyeballs. So, you know, I don't think it would be too smart to make too big a deal of any ratings related things this year. You know, the key for the league, I think, is that they pulled this off, they got it going, and, you know, they've kept some continuity for their business at a time when it was certainly no foregone conclusion they'd be able to do that.
No doubt about it. And kind of on the big picture front at the same time, I don't know if you heard or saw the interview, but Bob Costas spoke to NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, who has said that, you know, they were looking at Christmas at the earliest for when they want to start. Now says just what he knows, and the more they're learning, maybe going in January is the best bet for the NBA to restart next season. Would it be safe to say, and you were on the Gary Bettman State of the League call on Saturday, but would it be safe to say that pretty much anything that applies to the NBA also applies to the NHL in terms of what they're dealing with, timelines, all that type of stuff?
Yeah, I would say with this specific issue, the COVID-19 and how they're handling the seasons, there's almost direct overlap in the way things have worked. And I think the leagues have done a lot of sharing behind the scenes of information. And you know, let's face it, they're dealing with many of the same challenges and complications to their business. Now, there's some unique aspects to each league that you know, may have things differ. For example, I don't think the NBA was considering putting its bubble in Canada, but it made sense to do that here. For the NHL, for a whole host of reasons, including the fact that we got lower, you know, transmission rates, you know, up here. But, you know, if Adam Silver's saying that, I think we're all fair to assume that it applies directly to the NHL as well. And you know, the date that I've been hearing here in the last few days that's been floating around is, you know, somewhere around January 15th.
Okay.
You know, that's by no means a hard and set date, but I think that's maybe a bit of a loose target for when something might resume. And you know, I think the commissioner was kind of hinting that way too in his talk. I mean, he mentioned it was going to be late December, early January. Well, you know, I think that the truth is maybe even likely to be a bit later than that, you know, by the time they're able to get everything organized and get the league up and running again.
Well, and Elliot keeps on talking about the road to fans or the path to fans being kind of like a condition for the league to come back and for ownership to be okay to come back. And it's funny you mentioned Gary, and he tagged something after a Bill Daly response and said, "I'm just thinking this randomly," which of course you know would never happen with the commissioner. He doesn't do anything calculated, right? That isn't calculated. But he said, maybe we start with no fans, then socially distanced fans, and then eventually back to full buildings. It kind of seems like they might have had a path plotted out to how this might work.
Well, you know, the Board of Governors has been having calls, and you know, at some point that idea was shared with owners that there's a third kind of way of looking at the season. And, you know, obviously I don't even think they know what those phases will exactly be, but the idea would be that maybe the first third of the schedule is without fans, and then the second third you introduce some people where you're able to do so, where restrictions allow and so forth. And, you know, you hope by the end that you're either playing in full buildings or in much more full buildings where, you know, revenues are closer to what they would be under typical conditions. So, you know, I think that seems to be the way things are going. I mean, the NFL's plan isn't quite spelled out that clearly, but that's essentially what the NFL is doing. I mean, there's a handful of stadiums right now that are already allowing fans. There's hope in some other cities that's going to start as the season progresses. And you know, I think that we should all sort of get ready that there's never going to be a moment where the flip just switches and we say, okay, everything's normal now. I think that everything is going to be phased back in
right
in society. And it just seems to me that that's the natural way to have it, you know, happen with sports arenas, because, you know, we still don't know what lies in the future here. If the rates are going to spike again at some point, I mean, it's just impossible to say on this specific date and pick anyone in the future that we're going to have full buildings then.
Yeah, no doubt about it. What you asked the commissioner straight up about an all-Canadian division, and I know he didn't indulge the question necessarily, but certainly said that, hey, we've looked at pretty much everything you could think of. Just from what you understand, how, like, is that still a very viable consideration for the league?
Well, they might be forced to do it, honestly. I mean, I don't have any particular insight into what the Canadian government's going to do in terms of border restrictions and travel restrictions, quarantines, and those types of things. But to this point, what all of us as Canadians have been told is that, you know, I believe it's through October 21st, nothing's changing. And you know, they've sort of consistently been pushing that date back and back and back. And so, you know, it only needs to be pushed back another one or two times, and you're into the window where we're talking about having the season again. And obviously, somewhere in that window, the league is going to have to make a decision on how it's going to pull off the season, what that's going to look like. And you know, as long as you can't have teams traveling into Canada and playing a game the next day or that type of thing and then leaving again, which you remember was part of the reason the Blue Jays are playing out of Buffalo right now, is that, you know, the governments around Toronto and Ontario didn't allow that to happen. You know, I have no reason to believe that that's going to change in time for the league to start up the next season. And so I just think it could get to a point where it makes the most sense. I don't know exactly how it would work. Obviously, that division's pretty spread out in terms of time zones, and you know, it's probably not ideal, you know, if the Canucks are playing games in Montreal in their division, you know, in terms of just TV starts and all that sort of thing. You know, there's going to be challenges built into it. I mean, I'm not certainly not saying it's easy, but, you know, I do think that there's some logic to it, and I think it would generate some excitement too. So, you know, the reason I asked, you know, the commissioner about that is because it's something I'm curious to find out. And, you know, he didn't shoot me down. He just didn't want to give me any specific info on what he's thinking about that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I thought, and he tagged it with, and pretty much anything that you've considered, we've probably considered too, which was basically a yes, that they've considered going in that direction. And I just kind of wonder, like, regardless of the border being open or not, it kind of just feels like regional schedule, like what Major League Baseball has done this year, that kind of almost feels like a foregone conclusion in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't think we're seeing 31 teams each play each other home and away, no matter what this looks like, you know, which is the way it would be under normal circumstances. I think it makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, you just want to even limit the travel. You know, as we've talked about, I think you're going to see games grouped together more. So you go to a city and play that team two or three times, right, maybe while you're there, to limit the flights and to you know, just try to make this a little bit easier on the players, because obviously there's going to be a lot of games in a short amount of time, you know, no matter when they start or no matter how many games there are, they're going to try to maximize what they can possibly do. And so, you know, I think it does make some sense in the Canadian context, and I'm almost cheering for it, honestly, just because I think it would be a different season, but I think it could be a pretty fun season too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With Chris Johnston, our NHL insider, joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays. My friend, what are you hearing about Jacob Markstrom in Vancouver and how negotiations are going there?
Well, he doesn't have a contract. So, I mean, you know, nothing is done till it's done. And we have to remember too, that October 9th or somewhere very close to that tends to be a deadline that forces movement in both directions when it comes to contract discussions, when you have sides that want to stick together. And, you know, I do think Jacob Markstrom would, you know, in perfect circumstances, would love to remain a member of that team. But, you know, this is his time where I think he's earned the right to cash in. I think he's earned the right to have a little bit more stability and security with his contract situation than he's enjoyed in the past. And, you know, as a result of that, I do think that there's a chance that this doesn't, result in him getting that new deal. But, it sounds like the Canucks have been fairly busy and talking to a few of their guys. I think they've been talking to Tyler Toffoli as well, who could become a UFA. And, you know, they've got a lot of money to move around there one way or another in the coming years, with some big contracts coming for Pettersson and Hughes and you know, just some more veteran players that I think would be expendable in a market where you could trade them. But I don't know if that market exists today. And so, you know, I think the Canucks probably have one of the most interesting off seasons to attack here. And you know, if it's not Jacob Markstrom, they're going to have to be paying somebody, because, you know, as high as they are on Thatcher Demko, I think that there's an understanding within that organization they're going to need two quality starters, not just one.
Well, and I know that Sat Shah at our sister station 650 has been chasing this story for a while and working it. And you know, that essentially the feel that he gave yesterday on the air was that this could get done. The Canucks might just have to move a little bit. Is that, and obviously that's really no different than a lot of negotiations, but is that kind of the sense that you get that right now it might be the Canucks that are taking the harder line?
For sure, you know, because they feel, I think, a little bit that what they saw from Thatcher Demko at the end of the playoffs, you know, that maybe removed a little bit of leverage from Markstrom's side, if you will, just, you know, the confidence that gave him in that player and what he did. And you know, look, this isn't just money either, or term. I mean, what they do when it comes to the expansion draft next year has been a factor in these discussions throughout. I know that, you know, the team has been pretty unwilling to give him a full no move, which would, you know, would guarantee that he can't be exposed without wanting to be to Seattle. And you know, I think he deserves some kind of assurance in that. I mean, he's signing with them potentially at a time when he could walk free and sign anywhere in the league. And he doesn't want to have to move again in a year's time to an expansion team necessarily. So, you know, it's a multi-layered negotiation. And I don't think we've got to the point yet, with still 2.5 weeks, where the real final numbers are on the table, if you know what I mean. I kind of view the Pietrangelo situation the same way. I mean, and I know that flared up, and, you know, they've called off talks for now, but it would be very surprising to me if there wasn't at least some degree of conversation and potentially even movement in what's being offered, you know, before October 9th.
On the Markstrom front, if he does make it to free agency, would Calgary be a potential landing spot for him in your eyes?
It's so tough to say. I mean, I think it makes some sense. But the goalie carousel is going to go crazy here at some point. I mean, you know, we could see Henrik Lundqvist traded. We could see Marc-Andre Fleury traded. Frederick Anderson.
Yep.
We believe Leonard's probably resigning in Vegas, but, you know, Corey Crawford's a free agent. Braden Holtby's a free agent. So, you know, we've got so many different guys that, you know, I can't tell you who's going to end up where, but I do think it's going to be pretty crazy. And, you know, any team that feels it needs a number one goalie, I think, would be wise to get Markstrom. For my money, he's the best that's going to be available among the UFA goaltenders at this point in time. He had just a tremendous year. You know, there's probably a little bit of concern because he had a knee injury in March towards the end of the season. And you know, he's at an age where if you're signing him to term, there's going to be some risk there, as there is with any player. But, you know, I could see the fit with him in Calgary, but I think I can make a case for, you know, 6 or 7 other teams as well.
For sure. Any, and just a final thought, are you hearing anything on, like, is the goaltending market, as you talk about it being so crazy and potentially hotter than we've ever seen it before, are you, like, is it starting to heat up already from who you've spoken to?
Well, there's been a lot of conversations. I think, you know, teams have to learn a bit more before the movement starts, though. You know, if I take the Leafs as an example, they're not trading Frederick Anderson until they know 100% who they're replacing him with. And, you know, that replacement might not be available until October 9th when free agency begins. And so, you know, I think we're getting there. But, you know, the week or so before free agency will be when it really gets interesting. Because by then, when we're talking about Jacob Markstrom, I think we're going to have a lot more clarity on exactly where it's headed, whether he's going to market or resigning. You know, if those players don't resign, then I think teams will gear up towards them. And you know, don't make any plans from October 6th to 10th or so if you're a big hockey fan, because I think a lot of it's going to go down all in a very compressed amount of time.